Exoskin.
Exoskin.us.
You know why we both did it, Scott? Because you have 2 feet. That's why we both did it.
Oh, yeah. Or you can go to our partner's page, click on the Exoskin banner, and it will link you over to exoskin.us.
Hey, we're here with Business Vice President of Business Development, Croy. Croy, thanks for joining us to talk about your new sock that's coming out. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, thanks for the opportunity. Yeah, we just launched a crew version of our Exotoes sock. So up until this point, we only had 2 lengths. We had an ankle and a quarter crew, which are our number one selling sock. And that sock's only been out a year. But a lot of trail runners like a longer sock. And so we listened and we developed the crew version, a little bit different in the branding. It says Exotoes down the back of the leg, opposed to having Exoskin logo across the toes. That's not there on this version. So
that's fantastic. I have some personal experience with the Exoskin sock. Now, for some reason, which I won't share why, I was wearing the other guy's toe socks. I didn't mean to, just happened to work out. And I was on that 50-mile run with Donna on a very dusty trail, and she did it right. She was in her Exoskin socks. We both had the exact same shoe on, Ultra Lone Peak. So all variables were the same. Trail was the same. Shoes were the same. Socks were different. At the end of the 50 miles, we pulled our socks off. Her feet were pristine, and mine were dusty as if I was running in a pair of sandals. It was significantly different, and I knew right then and there that that's what makes the sock work and the material work, is it keeps your feet clean so you don't end up with the blisters.
And you know that dust is the enemy of clean, non-blistered feet.
Absolutely. So, Croy, the material works, the construction works, and the sock works. So we appreciate what you guys have done to make our sport more
bearable.
Yeah, bearable.
So show us your skin. Go on social media and post a picture of how you're using the Exoskin gear. Go to exoskin.us, or you can go to our partners page and click on the banner.
Thank you, Croy, for sharing some time with us.
Thank you for the opportunity. We appreciate it.
Everlywell, lab testing made easy, results you can understand.
You know, they sent us the opportunity to take one of these tests, and I decided to take the heart health test, which is a kit that they deliver to you in the mail, comes very quick. It is a very easy to use step-by-step instructions. There's a video if you want to watch a video, but I had to prick my finger, put a little bit of blood on this little strip, and I mailed it in, and within probably 5 business days, I had my results back. And this measured my cholesterol and all sorts of things like that. It's one of the things that I've been struggling with over the last couple of years is some high cholesterol numbers. So I know basically what my numbers are, but I decided to put this to the test. I got my results back. I know what the numbers they gave me. 2 weeks later, I went and took a real lab test that was ordered by my doctor, where they fill 2 giant syringes full of blood. And I got those results back just yesterday.
And I've compared, Scott. I've seen them, and I am blown away.
You were pretty surprised.
They were
right on the money.
Every one of them.
Within 1 or 2 digits off. And so we know that they're reliable. They have over 35 tests that you can take, from testosterone. There's a men's health test. They have sexual health tests if you want to do that.
And how about Lyme's disease test as well?
Yeah, a folic acid test. There's 35 different ones. If you go to everlywell.com, you can look at all of those tests, and they're very affordable. It's private. They also have people that, if you have questions about the test, they reach out to you and say, here's your results. Would you like to talk about it?
So, you know, super convenient and super relevant, especially when people are taking charge of their own health, like athletes that listen to this.
You go to everlywell.com/TRN and use the code TRN, and you can get 15% off your first test.
Everlywell.com/TRN for 15% off.
All right. We ready?
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Don. You know, I mean, I didn't know what it was going to be like. You know, you sound like a nice guy on this podcast, but
I know it's on the upper edge, and you guys have won a couple of awards, and I've never prepped for a podcast ever.
Oh, that's what you're doing.
What are you balancing your checkbook over there, HAW? What's going on?
Yeah.
You're recording this, aren't you, Freeman?
I get everything. All right. Are we ready?
Yeah.
Thanks for joining another edition of Trail Runner Nation. Hey, we have an exciting podcast today.
We absolutely do. And I'm excited to get underway and talk about it.
Courtney DeWalter just came off of an amazing first place finish at UTMB a couple weeks ago. And there is a lot of interviews out there with her talking about her experiences of the race. We're going to approach it from a little bit different point of view.
We're going to talk about grit, Scott.
Grit. And if you pay attention or stay tuned till the end of the podcast, we're going to turn you on to a grit series. It's a racing series that is put on by the John Wayne Foundation. We'll give you the details. Just stick through the Grit podcast. It's going to be easy because Courtney's an amazing racer. Andy Jones-Wilkins is going to be joining us. It's going to be a really good podcast. At the end, we're going to talk about this Grit running series.
John Wayne as in the actor or the ultra runner, Scott?
As in, is there a runner named John Wayne?
I'm sure there is somewhere. We go to Ultra Sign Up and we'll put in John Wayne and see if something pops up.
Maybe we should. This is the actor, and he was very well known for one of his most popular movies, True Grit. But we'll talk about that a little bit more when we get to the end of the podcast.
Yes, we may need this content.
All right. You wouldn't be the first guest to hang up on us, Courtney.
Oh, come on.
Hey, Courtney, but you were responsible to give me those morning chills, you know, those goosebumps, because I watched your finish at UTMB this morning, and whoa, so powerful, so cool. That must have been an incredible moment.
Yeah, it was pretty special.
And the other one that I watched, I think I sent you this. I don't know if you watched it, Freeman. The video, I can't remember who produced it or who did it. Was Solomon that did it for, was it Moab?
The Tahoe.
Oh, it was Tahoe. Yeah. That was a great, great video.
Yeah, that's Max Romy. He does a great job.
Yeah, that was, did you see that? It's like a 15 minute
video. I don't want to admit that I didn't watch everything Courtney has out there. Hey.
Oh, come on, Don.
Hey, we're burning our 50 minutes, so let's roll.
Okay. let me hit record over here.
Do you even know what we're doing?
No, but you guys are so great. I love the beard going on over there. Look at that.
Yeah, it's my
he climbs better with that beard.
Exactly. That's how long it's been since I've seen your faces.
Yeah, it's been a while. Well, we're glad that you're back, and boy, we have a good topic. we're gonna start it off.
Yep. Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. I jumped in on you, Scott. Go ahead.
You're who?
I'm Don Freeman.
I'm Scott War. Hey, and we have Courtney DeWalter with us.
Who?
Courtney DeWalter.
Oh.
Yeah. If you don't know that name now, especially this time of year, Courtney just came off of an amazing win at UTMB. And we've had her on the podcast before, and we're going to have her on today. Today, we're gonna skew the topic a little bit because there are a lot of really good interviews with Courtney that were released prior to this that talk about her race at UTMB. We're not going to get into the details necessarily of UTMB. There may be some stories that are funny anecdotes that will apply to this podcast, but we're going to skew it a little bit. We're going to talk about grit.
And what's fun is Courtney has no idea.
She has no idea what we're talking about.
or the agenda. But if you look back 2 years ago, we did a podcast on grit.
We did. Almost 2 years ago.
And it was with about Angela Duckworth's book called Grit.
Right.
And I have
do you have the full title?
I do. You had me look it up earlier, and I've got it here. Grit, the power of passion and perseverance. And Angela Duckworth, it was a bestseller on New York Times list, and it has 10 questions. We need to really credit AJW for sending us these questions.
And AJW was supposed to join us, but I think he got lost on the trail somewhere. We're not sure exactly where he is.
He's not as fast as he used to be,
and
Scott.
So he may be joining us as he regains. He's very quick. If he goes off trail, he's usually very quick to backtrack and get back in with the Peloton group of runners. But way back when Angela Duckworth was writing and preparing the book, she was looking to do some research.
Sure.
And one of the things that she did was she thought, I'm going to ask some questions of people that we think have grit and Andy Jones Wilkins way back before the book was written. Angela reached out to him and had him answer questions. She thought that he, as an ultra runner, had grit.
And we have those questions
we
here.
We have the questions. And so we're going to run through these questions with you, Courtney.
There are 10 of them, and we only have about 45 minutes left, so I am going to put a timer on us, so we need to move through each one of these.
Okay.
And the timer goes off, that's it, we're moving to the next question.
Five minutes apiece, maybe less than five. Let's go three or four.
Three and a half.
Because we have a lot to discuss here with Courtney. First of all, to set this up, and this is the reason why, in my mind, we started thinking about grit, was Courtney has had an amazing 2019, coming off of an amazing 2018 and 2017.
Ultra runner of the year 2018. I thought,
yes,
I'd throw that in.
But this year she won Tarawara 100K. She won Behind the Rocks Ultra 50 miler. She won the Madeira Island 115K. She won overall at the Mueller Marathon, and then she went into Western States and had a hip issue. This was back in June, had an hip issue. We've seen videos, we've talked to you about this, and a heartbreaking DNF at Western States. But then grittily, if I may use that word I just made up,
yep,
grittily, or with much grit, Courtney comes back from hip issues and kicks everybody's butt over in Europe at UTMB.
Yeah,
that's grit.
Courtney, did your mother ever teach you to share the podium? Hey, let's start off with these questions.
You guys are so great. It's good to see you.
Hey, so Courtney, here's how Angela starts this off. She said, there are a number of statements here that may or may not apply to you. And there's no right answers or wrong answers, but answer them how you feel that you compare to the general population. So a room full of people, how do you compare to that room when we ask you these questions? Are you ready?
What kind of room of people is it? Oh, where am I?
You're
set
at
the scenario.
Yep, okay, you're on the trail by yourself.
You're not on the trail. You're at the airport, you're flying over to UTMB. And there's all kinds of people there in that lobby, and you're looking around and you're comparing yourself to those folks. And we have 3 minutes. We have 12 hours and 3 minutes. Let me get on that. Okay, here we go. 3:30. Question number one.
Okay, question number one. New ideas and projects sometimes distract me from previous ones. Okay. And then there's a scale here of 5 scale, very much like me or not much like me at all.
3. Yeah.
So right in the middle.
Depending. Yeah. Sometimes new ideas or projects get swooped in really well to the current ideas and projects, and I am excited about all of it. And sometimes, those new ideas kind of take over.
So when you get set for a race, do you stay focused on that, or can you get derailed, find a different race, or diverge from your initial plan?
When I'm preparing for a race, I'm not usually like obsessing over it. It's just part of what I'm doing. I'm training all of the time anyways, and so eventually there's going to be a race on the calendar. So it's never like intentional training, I guess, in the way that some people will tailor their training very specifically for the races they're doing next. It's just kind of business as usual all the time, and then racing when it's race day.
One of the comments you've made earlier that I really like is you go out for a run and you decide after you get out there how long that run's going to be. It might be 1.2 miles, 12 miles, or 22 miles. You don't know until you get out there and start running. And I love that. Just get out there and start going and listen to your body.
Yeah, I think over the years I've found it's the best way that I work with training, and it keeps it really fun. And for the most part, knock on wood, keeps me healthy.
Do you ever have distractions that make you not want to go out for that run, that daily run?
No, not usually. Maybe just life stuff comes up, but not distractions necessarily.
Okay. Go ahead, number two there,
Freeman. All right. Hey, as usual, you're ahead of the curve. We had 1:08 left on that one, so good for you for being ahead. Here's the next one. Setbacks don't discourage me. I don't give up easily.
And again, it's a scale 1 to 5, not like you at all the way up to very much like me.
And remember, you're comparing yourself to everybody in the airport.
Setbacks don't discourage me?
Correct.
I'd say 4.5.
Yeah.
You can't. Yeah. I'm going to round it up to 5 there, Courtney.
No half scales? Well,
you don't know who's in the room, so I don't want to assume 5.
Hey, by the way, if you're playing along, this quiz is available at angeladuckworth.com, and you can take the quiz and get your grit score.
Because we're scoring you at the end.
Yeah, we're going to give you a score, that. Courtney.
I see you marking down my answers over there.
She's going to podium here, I bet.
On the Scantron.
So I think that this is really important for ultra runners. I think most ultra runners would score fairly high here. Setbacks. You had a setback at Western States. Not the result that you had hoped for. Obviously, you were going for a win and you were in first place at that point. And you had a setback. How long were you discouraged when you finally had to cut the band and say the race is over? How long did that affect you before you were on track for your next goal?
Well, I think by the next week, Monday, I was in the physical therapist's place and starting to problem solve. So we were already making moves to fix it and to figure out how to prevent it then in the future. So, I was bummed that it happened the way that it did and that it felt like very uncertain then if I could get it fixed before UTMB, which was my next goal. But the reality was we had to just start problem solving. So dwelling on how bummed I wasn't going to fix it. Mm-hmm. But moving forward with surrounding myself with knowledgeable people and then being really diligent with the exercises and the advice they were giving was the main focus then.
So Courtney, what was the problem? You know, we all speculated. We had no idea. You know, mm-hmm. we thought maybe we didn't know. What was the issue?
Yeah, I didn't know either. So it was showing up as it just started buckling my leg and shooting pains down my leg. I couldn't run on it from Cal 1 until Green Gate. So from mile 67 until 80, I was trying to figure out a way to get around this issue.
to hop down the trail.
You know what, Courtney? I want to just stop you right there. She's talking about this, which is a disappointment, and she has the biggest smile on her face. She's already past. I mean, she's way past. She just thinks it's kind of fun. Go ahead,
she's
Courtney.
The champion of UTMB. Smile.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it was the situation. So there was nothing we could do about it. Called it at mile 80. And it turned out to be a tendonitis issue. And basically my body was really out of whack. The two sides of it were totally unbalanced. And so some of the muscle groups had stopped working and some were being overworked. And it showed up at mile 67 of a race. So not ideal, but I think it was a really good lesson for me to learn. To start doing some more of the maintenance work and the little detail stuff of running.
The silver lining to the cloud, right?
Well, I think
exactly.
I think that's an important part of someone that has grit is, like you said, you could worry about it and be discouraged about it, but you decided, let's move on. Let's figure out what the issue was. What's the problem? Let's fix it and let's get to the next step. And I think that's a good point of gritty people, a characteristic.
Do you think that experience helped you become a champion at UTMB? Did you bring something from Western States? Do you see that maybe Western States was a positive overall?
I think big picture, in the long run, it's going to end up being a positive. I think the turnaround for it to be beneficial from Western States to UTMB was a little bit quick.
Yeah.
I'm hoping now, I've got this whole kind of routine now to keep my hips strong and healthy and I think that will end up paying off in the long run.
Well, then I'm glad it happened to you, Courtney.
You're
welcome.
Another quick question. Were you surprised or did you think that you would be able to make the turnaround and get to UTMB and actually win?
I didn't know. I didn't know that I would even be cleared to race through the month of July. So that whole first month after being injured, I couldn't run really more than 5 or 6 miles. And I couldn't put together 2 days in a row of running. So if I ran 5 miles, then I had to skip the whole next day. And I was just, trying to wrap my brain around how is this going to play out for a 106-mile race in the Alps. But eventually it started clicking over and training happened enough to get there. But no, I didn't expect it.
At what point, how far before the race did you finally realize that, hey, I'm going to be able to race this thing?
I think maybe 3 weeks or two and a half weeks out. We started to actually gain some traction and get the ball rolling a little bit better. And the whole time my team, my physical therapist that I was working with, they knew that that was the big, like that was the next goal that I was hoping to get ready for. And so they were, you know, working with me as quickly as possible to like, just do this thing and get it healthy enough to do a race in August.
Let's give props to those physical therapists. Who was your physical therapist out there in Colorado?
Yeah, they're called Next Level, and they're right here in Golden, Colorado. A really great team. Yeah, good. I'm very thankful.
And did you have any issues with the hip at UTMB?
Little twinges here and there where it reminded me that it was there, but my whole body was basically twinging. What's it matter?
Hey, we're not following the 3.5 minute rule.
We've exceeded.
Yeah.
Question. I'm sorry, I was so long winded.
No, it's good stuff. Question number three for you. And again, this is on the scale 1 to 5, very much like you as a 5, not much like you as a 1. I often set a goal, but later choose to pursue a different one.
1.5.
Not like you at all. You choose the goal, you stick with it.
Yeah, for the most part.
Now, how about during a race? Are you flexible with your spreadsheet, your mental spreadsheet?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, in races, you encounter all sorts of problems and have to be pretty flexible with them. But for races, I often don't have like a hard goal of a certain time or certain splits or anything. It's not really how my brain or my racing works. So in that way, yeah. I guess I'm still not aiming hard for it.
Do you address a run much, a race much like you address a training run, where you just get out there and you say, "We'll see what happens. I'm just showing up and doing what I do."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and trying my very best for sure, and taking it piece by piece, and just being as efficient on each of the sections as possible, no matter what's happening.
Hey, we made up some time on that one, Scott, and we needed to.
Number 4. Go ahead, Don.
Now, remember, you're in the airport and you're looking around. You know, you've got some people that have some too many carry-ons, and you know who I'm talking about. Here's the next question.
They're only supposed to have one, but they have 5. How does that work? How are they allowed on the plane?
They'll never get those golf clubs in the overhead, ever.
But they're going to try.
They'll try it. Do they know?
I like the effort.
A for effort.
And here's number 4. I am a hard worker. Look around the airport, Courtney. I'm a hard worker. How do you compare? Scale? 1 to 5.
1 to 5 again.
5 being very hard.
4.5.
Nice.
I'm rounding, by the way. You got a 5 on that one.
You're an instructor and I think a science teacher. Is that right?
I was, yeah. I'm retired now.
Well, I understand. When you can run that fast, you get to retire. So do you round up at 4.5 or 4.6? What is the...
Oh.
I forget the rule.
I'm just holding steady at 4.5. It depends on what you're doing, the rounding rules.
Okay. That's why I've never learned
it. Depends.
Scott, ask the next question, number 5.
Number 5, I have difficulty maintaining my focus on projects that take more than a few moments. I have difficulty to maintain my focus on projects that take more than a few months to complete.
Mm.
1.5.
Now you're pretty low at that. So I need to interpret that.
So you do have difficulty maintaining focus, or you don't?
No, that's not like me, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Well, so one is not like me. Yep. So you maintain don't have focus. Difficulty.
You have maintained. When you go out and you're training for, let's say your A race for UTMB, let's say, how do you focus on that goal? How do you set that up in your mind as the goal? And what do you do to approach that goal?
That's a weird one. That's a weird example just because of how the training went for it.
Let's go year's Western States.
Yeah, just a race in general.
Do you write with lipstick on your bathroom mirror, you know, Western States? Or what do you do?
Would you guess that I own any lipstick?
I don't think you do.
No, I definitely don't. I train almost the same no matter what race I'm preparing for. So I get out and I do a lot of the same types of runs, whether I'm training for a 24-hour race on a track or Western States or, in theory, UTMB. I guess my focus then comes in just in the weeks leading up to it, starting to understand the course a little bit more maybe, or maybe reading a race report or two and finding out what I can from the interwebs, which is a lot. Mm-hmm. but otherwise, yeah, I don't need to see a course necessarily before I race on it. I like to stay in the moment in a race and just keep moving as well as I can.
Hey, we just did a thumbs up, thumbs down podcast with coaches Ian Sharman, Matt Lay, and Joe Uhan. And one of the questions we talked about was poles or no poles. And I've seen you run both ways here at UTMB. I saw some pictures of some poles. What's your preference? You like poles or no poles?
I don't mind poles. I prefer no poles just so that it's one less thing to think about.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Are we ready to move on? I think we used all 3.5 minutes there.
Number six, you're up.
Okay. Let me see. Number six, I finish whatever I begin.
Yeah, 4.5.
Yep. Now
you got a 5. I'm rounding up.
Was there, as I recall, your stomach went a little bit south at UTMB. Is that true?
That's correct.
Was there any point in that race where you thought, oh no, this is not going well, I'm not going to finish this?
Never. The thought was never that I wasn't going to finish. It was definitely like a kind of a train wreck in the last 50K there. So my stomach went south, and then just physically, I was totally spent and fatigued. But I knew going into it, I think because of the DNF at Western States, that no matter what, I was going to cross the finish line at UTMB. I didn't know what my fitness was. I didn't know how my hip would act. There's all the normal things you don't know about a 100-mile race. But I knew that I wanted to finish, even if I was coming in last place. So,
now, I knew how your hip was acting at the finish line because there's a YouTube video that shows the last kilometer on there. And your gait looked amazing with tons of people lining on each side of that town. Tell us about, what is it like running on a cloud?
I did not feel like I was running on a cloud there. I was just hoping my legs would just keep taking a few more steps to get to the actual end. But it was amazing. It was an amazing way to finish the race, and to have all those people out there giving high fives was really cool.
It looked cool and was amazing, and your gait looked fantastic. You looked like you were just floating. Next question.
Actually, go ahead. I have a question on that. So you said that there was like a 50-mile section that was really
50K.
50K section. Sorry, we're in Europe. that were really, really difficult. And we're talking about grit. How do you put those negative chatter? Or do you even let that chatter enter your mind? How do you know things are going bad, you're feeling bad. How do you continue? What do you do, Courtney?
I try to just stay strong in my head. And if those negative thoughts start creeping in, to shove them out as quickly as possible because they're useless in that case. And I knew that I wanted to finish, and I figured I might as well make it hurt while I'm out there trying to finish. So
you were making friends with the pain.
Yeah. Yeah. Might as well.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Question number 7, my interests change from year to year.
I would say that's a 1.5.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You know what I've noticed a pattern here. You're a half on everything. So you're making Scott work hard. Which direction do you go with that, Scott?
If a half, you always round up.
Okay.
I'm a mathematician. What I learned in math, which was before the new math?
It's called new math.
The new math was you round up at 5.
Yeah. Okay. All right. My interest never changed from year. Okay. Number 8. Did you want to add anything to that, Courtney? Did you have any comments that you'd like to...
About interests changing?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
All right. I think we covered that then. Number 8.
I got a question on that.
Oh, good.
What do you do when you're not running?
Yeah. What are your other interests?
What do you enjoy?
What would you say you do?
what do you enjoy doing to relax and take your mind off running? Besides listening to our podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's number 1. Number 2 is hanging out with family and friends.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's really important to me. I love spending time outdoors in any way, shape, or form. I particularly love playing yard games with a beer in hand.
Mm.
What's your favorite yard game?
Because I could beat you at that yard game.
Yeah?
Ooh, yeah.
Ooh. Well, we need to make this happen.
We may need to fly out to Colorado.
Bags.
What?
Really, any bags, you know, cornhole.
Oh, cornhole. Yeah. Okay.
How about lawn darts?
I do like lawn darts, but I miss the old school kind that were real darts.
Ah. Yeah, yeah.
How about...
Now they're all those plastic ones.
They don't stick.
Yeah.
Bocce ball?
I love bocce ball.
Okay, we won't be playing that then.
Just because I love it doesn't mean I'm good at it.
Well, let me ask. Let me clarify. Are you a good runner? Okay.
Sometimes.
All right.
I'm glad that the real lawn darts have been outlawed, since we know that you love to do it with a beer in hand. That's probably a good thing.
All right.
Number 8. I am diligent. I never give up.
Yeah. 4.5.
Yeah.
You have to give yourself a half. I
guess. Yeah. There is no one full number.
I don't feel a full 5 ever or a full 1 ever.
How hard? we may edit this out because it may not be a good question. How hard was it to pull out of Western States with only 20 miles left?
Yeah, it was a huge bummer.
Yeah.
But I mean, it just became so the situation became, you're not going to run another step of this race. I'd been trying for 13 miles to run on it, and mm-hmm. it was clear that wasn't happening. So hiking in, which was definitely an option, and my last pacer was ready to hike through the night with me just to go to the finish line, or call it and get this thing diagnosed to prevent further damage and to start fixing it, actually. So... there weren't too many options left, you know.
And there wouldn't have been a UTMB victory if you hiked in the last 20. You know, they're just unlikely. Sure. But unlikely that, you know, you did the right thing and pulled it at the right time.
As we've discussed on the podcast before, you know, there's a fine balance between not giving up and being dumb. And I think that you made the right decision, and obviously you made the right decision because now you have a podium at UTMB.
One might argue that it takes more discipline to call it than it does to finish it. You know, it takes more guts to say.
And maturity.
Yep. Okay, 3 minutes and 29 seconds.
Nailed it.
Yeah, oh, I made it up. Okay. Number 9. Are you ready, Scott?
Yeah, go ahead.
Now, you may need this time. Do you know how to score it and add it and look at the chart and everything?
Do you think I'm an amateur here? I know exactly what
I'm doing.
That's
why I asked, my friend. That's why
I'm doing it online.
Okay.
This is.
Oh.
The computer does the work, Freeman.
Okay, good. All right, here we go. Number 9. I have been obsessed with a certain idea or project for a short time, but lost.
But later lost interest.
Would you like me to read that again? It doesn't count against your 3.5 minutes. I have been obsessed with a certain idea or project for a short time, but later lost interest. So you had something that you really loved, and all that, it kind of just drifted off. I'm not so certain I'm interested in that anymore.
Yeah, I don't really do that. I'd say a 1.5, maybe a 2.
Okay. Ooh, a 2.
She committed to a whole number.
Yeah. It took 9.
And let's go to the last question, and we'll score you, and then we'll have some more discussions about grit. I have overcome setbacks to conquer an important challenge. Can I answer this one for you?
It's a 0.5. Yeah. It's a 0.5 of something. Yeah, go ahead.
A 5.5.
Oh.
What would you say, Courtney?
Yeah, 4.5, 5.
5.5, that's what I gave you. Okay, so do you want to know what your grit score is? On a scale of 1 to 5, your grit scale is a 4.4. You scored higher than about 90% of American adults in the recent study. So you're gritty. Well,
a 4.4, huh?
So 4.4.
So I should get that tattooed on me.
You can. And let me translate that for you. That means you can have an aisle seat if you'd like, or a window, whatever you want with a 4.4. Definitely you can sit in the seat that requires certain strength and determination to open up the side door on the plane. You know how they qualify you at that spot?
Yep. Rope 15? Next time I can just say, I'm a 4.4. Yeah. Let me sit on here.
And you can combine it with your credit score. It'll bump it up a bit.
Hey, Courtney, were you born as a 4.4? Were you always gritty, or is this something that you've developed?
I would guess probably a combination of both. I think my upbringing and how we were raised, and also then like my coaches and teammates that I've had throughout the years, definitely factored into it.
Can you improve your grittiness? Is that something that you practice?
I don't in my head say to myself, like, today I'm practicing grittiness, but I think, yeah, you can improve it, and experiences maybe can make you more gritty, because you'll gain some confidence of, you know, I survived something like that, so I could continue on in this awful situation or whatever it is. What do you guys think?
Well, I forget the question.
Can you develop grit? Can you improve your grit score, Freeman?
Oh, I thought it was my ability to concentrate.
You know, I was going to say, on that question during the grit quiz, where it says you lose focus. Yeah.
I'm a 0.5 on that one. I think absolutely you can develop because you're practicing it out there. You know, I think that there's opportunity to practice grit in just regular life. You don't have to go out to a 50-mile run to test your grit, because life's going to throw you stuff. And I think practicing on the trail allows you to manage just about anything better in real life. So I think it's one of the reasons we run.
Well, I love this topic, and we can go on for another hour and a half on this too, but we're not going to. But I think that's one of the blessings we get from ultra running is experience. I remember, you know, one of the first races I ran where both of my heels just completely blistered up, and I had to finish the race, and it hurt every single step. But I finished the race, and for the next 2 weeks while my heels were healing, it hurt. And that experience, I think back on when things go bad in other races or other trainings, and I think, you know what? I've already been there and I've overcome it. I'm a grittier person because of the experiences that I had.
So Courtney, I want to ask you, when Scott said he had to finish the race, where does that word had? What plugged in his head had, or are your head, or my head, or any racer with a bib on, had to finish the race? What obligation do we put on ourselves when we have to
Well, finish. I'll tell you my the reason why is, yeah. is I was in the middle of the wilderness and and a helicopter would have had to come and get me. Okay. I had to get to the finish line.
Point well taken. And you
or I would have died.
Yeah.
All right. Now I get the word had. All right. I was looking for a little something a little more, you know, philosophical.
Yeah.
You know, but that's good. So, gritty. Either parent hand you this grit or something that just you developed on your own? Is your dad or mom super gritty?
Yeah, I'd say they're both super gritty and raised me and my brothers to finish what we start and that we have to work hard to get what we want and that when we do something, we should do it at our very best or not do it at all. Like there's no point in halfway doing something. And also to then have fun with it. So I think all four of those things factor into grittiness in general.
You know, you were a teacher not too long ago, not too many years ago. Do you think kids today with the distractions and we could go on and on with the culture and the society that they live in today versus what you grew up in, do you think that they're less resilient than your generation?
I think that's really hard to generalize and hard to say, but I imagine that it's pretty tough being a kid right now with all of the things that are at their fingertips and available to them.
Yeah, I think that we, especially with social media, we put everything is rose colored and everything is good. We don't see a lot of people that are struggling and going through hard times. And so it's easy to think that if I'm going through a hard time, that's not normal and I should give up. And we may lose some of that resilience. Here's a question for you that I think about when I think of Courtney. Do you take pleasure in discomfort?
I think being uncomfortable and being in the pain cave is a special place to be. So I don't know if the word is pleasure, but it usually means you're doing something that's pretty cool and, you know, you're pursuing your best self that day if you're struggling that much. And so, yeah, I think that's fun and that's a special place to be able to go to.
Do you always go there in a long race?
It seems. Yeah.
How long do you stay in the cave? How long does it take to get out of that cave? And do you have any strategies of getting out?
It depends on just what's happening in the race and how it's unfolding. Sometimes it does seem like I'll go in and out of it just based on the like highs and lows of the race and ultra running in general. And then sometimes like at UTMB, I went in it and there was no coming out. So I think I went pretty far back in that cave.
So to win a race, I know in a perfect situation, you'd never find a cave, but do you feel like you need to push yourself to the very limit to have your best race to make sure that you peek your head in that cave, if you will, to make sure to finish at your best time?
Yeah, I think I want to always, and I want to finish the race not wondering what if. Mm-hmm. What if I had pushed a little harder? What if I had been more efficient? And so that's always the goal, regardless of where I am in the field or who's around me or not around me. I want to go to the cave.
So you learn something from every race, I imagine. I think we all strive for that. We want to perform our best, but we want to come back with a lesson too. What lesson did you come back with from UTMB?
I think a lot of lessons. I learned a lot about running the European trails for the first time. And I learned more, like accumulated more, I guess, evidence of the mental strength that we can have and how we can keep pushing, even if our legs feel like they won't catch us for another step.
How was your reception over there as an American coming in and winning their race?
It was a great atmosphere. The people were all really wonderful and welcoming. And it was a really positive experience.
Have you converted to European racing? Do you think that that is something that you want to do more and more of, the mountain running over there?
Definitely. I want to do more racing all over the world, though. So in the United States and in Europe and every continent, if possible, would be cool.
So what's next on your list? Do you have something out there that that you want to go to next? Maybe it's already on your calendar. Maybe it's a secret.
No secrets. The 24-hour World Championships are this year, so they're being held at the end of October, and I'll be participating and competing in that.
Have you ever done a 24-hour race?
I have, yeah.
No, I mean, Freeman, you laugh at me. That's a good question. Come on, man.
I know. No, it was a great question because she's so fast, she doesn't see 24. I get that.
She's been on the trail for 24. I mean, a timed event where you go as many miles as you can in 24 hours.
I have. Yep. I've done some that are on short loops, like a 2 mile or 1 mile loop. And I've done some on a 400 meter track.
Tell us about your nutrition. Do you strictly watch carbs, or are you a keto person? If we opened up your pantry or your refrigerator, would we know that you're a competitive professional ultra runner?
Definitely not.
Let's rate your refrigerator from zero to five.
Let's take the webcam. Let's go.
All right.
No, I don't follow any specific diet.
Has it changed?
Listen to my body and eat what I crave and drink what I like.
That's working. Does your body like Reese's peanut butter cups?
Loves them.
Okay.
Likes jelly beans more. But pretty pumped. It's candy corn season.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm filling up on all my vegetables with that.
When you're racing, are you a sweet or savory craver?
When I race, I stay in a really small family of nutrition that I use. So I use Tailwind, Honey Stinger waffles and chews. And then if it's 100K or longer, I'll add mashed potatoes into the mix.
Cool. Even when you're at the Tahoe 200 or Moab 240, do you ever take in real food?
Yeah, I guess in the 200s it changes a little bit in that then I'll just start trying to eat some more real food in that second day.
What do you think your best distance is, Courtney? Because you do so well at every distance. What do you feel is your wheelhouse, your favorite distance?
I love 100 miles or more. Oh. So anything that's going to take, you know, near a day or a couple days.
So I'm going to throw this out there. A couple weeks ago, we did a podcast on the Sri Chanmoy Self-Transcendence Run in New York City.
3,100 miles.
3,100 miles day after day around a 1.5 mile block.
No, 0.55.
0.55 mile block.
In New York City.
Yes.
Any interest in Queens? Any interest? Do you think down the road?
I don't know. That event is wild. I would love to see it in person. And I definitely want to like read up and understand a little bit more of the history of it. But what a cool challenge, and what a cool place those runners go to as they're circling that block.
Yes.
Going nowhere.
And one of the brilliant things is that they shut the course down. So that, you know, you need to sleep. You have to sleep.
Yep.
Which is something that you don't seem to have to do at 200 right. miles. What did you sleep at Moab? Didn't you have like 22 minutes was your sleep time?
That was broken up into two sections, I think.
Yeah. 21 minutes at Moab. At Tahoe last year, I struggled a lot with sleepiness in the second night. And I don't know what it added up to, because I kept trying to take the magic 1 or 2 minute naps that weren't working. So I probably accumulated maybe 20 minutes at Tahoe as well. But I know you can do a 200 on no sleep. Kyle Curtin, who won Tahoe 200 last year, he had 0 minutes of sleep. Mm. So that's something to aspire to.
Well, you can also do a 200 mile on about 15 or 18 hours of sleep. That's possible too.
When are you going to do another?
Oh, I'm banking my sleep now. I want to do another one. Absolutely. They're a lot of fun. You don't have to run fast. And that's what I like about them.
It's a cool adventure.
Yes.
You can look at the scenery. There is scenery, Freeman, by the way. If you probably didn't see it.
No.
Hey, Courtney, if you're talking to some up-and-coming new runners that are thinking, you know what, they're having some confidence problems. You know, I don't know whether I could run a marathon. I'm not sure whether I could run 50K. I just don't know whether I have enough grit and enough confidence. What advice would you give them?
To give it a shot. And everyone starts that way, I think. Standing on the line of my first road marathon, I thought I wouldn't survive it. And basically, I texted goodbye to my family and friends because I thought 26.2 miles was insane and there was no way I was going to make it. So that's a normal feeling. And if you just jump in and give it a shot, I think we can surprise ourselves.
And what happened on that 26.2 mile adventure? How did it work out for you? And at the end, did you think never again? Or did you think, yeah, I love this?
It hurt, but I made it. And I think I remember feeling like how cool it was to travel with my feet for 26.2 miles. And then I just wondered what else was possible.
What's your favorite piece of gear right now? What excites you about putting on or bringing with you? Do you have anything that's favorite, either earbuds or a bandana or a pair of socks? What's got you motivated right now?
Candy corns.
Oh, yeah. Well, candy corns. That's true.
Halloween.
I'm sorry. You know, if you were going trick-or-treating, you could probably fill at least 3 or 4 pillowcases as fast as you are.
That could be a fun challenge.
It could.
I should maybe set that up. And then I have an excuse to be trick-or-treating as a 34-year-old.
Yeah,
it's for an ultramarathon.
I want to hear the answer to your question. I derailed you. I apologize. What's your favorite piece of gear right now?
I mean, I don't really have anything that, how you worded it, excites me or gets me out the door. I always have with me chapstick and like some eye drops, which have been helping me not lose my vision. And some of the Colgate wisps, toothbrushes.
Yeah.
I love having those handy.
So what you're describing is something when there's a lot of wind in your face. Chapstick, eye drops.
that tells you how fast she's going. I don't have to worry about any of that.
stick your head out the window when you're driving in the car.
You need eye drops. You need chapstick. Yep.
Yeah. And I think in these ultras, keeping your feet really happy is important. And I used to get tons of blisters. Mm-hmm. And so in the past year, I guess I've figured out a pretty good combination. And that's exciting just to not have to deal with that. So coating my feet in squirrel's nut butter, like gobs of it all over, and then putting them in Gingy socks, the toe socks, and then the Salomon shoes has been a perfect combo for blister free.
So you recommend putting on the squirrel's nut butter, lathering the feet up, then putting the sock on and shoe. You're good with that.
Yeah, I love that. Do you put it on top of your socks?
That's what I was at. That's the exact same question. I'm going, Freeman, how do you apply it?
That, the order of things, it's important. I was putting my shoes on, then the socks on, then the squirrel's nut butter. What shoe are you running in right now? Which Salomon shoe?
The S-Lab Ultra 2.
Yeah. You love that shoe?
Love it. Yeah. Have you guys tried it?
We have not. I haven't. Had you?
No, I'm running in a set of ultras. I'm sorry. I just need to. I do have an S-Lab shoe, and I do love that shoe, and I like it. But I don't think it's the 2. I think it's the Model 1.
All right.
If there is. It must be a 1 because there's a 2. So I'll have to, I'll have to look at my number.
Put the squirrel's nut butter on first, and then the socks.
Got it.
Hey, Courtney, one last thing. What do you think your competitive advantage when you're on the line?
She has grit, Scott. She's a 4.4.
She's a 4.4. I know. I want to hear it from her.
Okay.
When you're at the starting line at UTMB and you have a goal of finishing winning this race, what do you think your advantage is?
I don't know.
That's a good question. That's a good answer. Let me ask you this.
That comes from a humble, humble heart.
It does.
Yeah.
You go up to the start line, the starting line. Where do you walk up? Do you walk up to the very start and make a statement, I'm taking the lead from the get? Or where do you hang out? Because I don't.
Yeah. Definitely not right on the line.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, at UTMB, I was lucky to kind of wiggle my way into a spot next to Casey.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it was fun to be able to share that huge atmosphere and those moments with her as we waited for the go sign.
Hmm. How long do you have to wait up there?
I think I was only in the start corral for maybe 7 minutes something.
Yeah. Do you get
it's a wild start zone though. There's like over 2,000 starters in that race.
Yeah, and people are running during that road section probably a little bit faster than they're going to be running the middle of the trail.
Yeah, for sure. And my only thought for those first couple miles was to not fall down and get trampled
it's
to death.
running from the bulls.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, Courtney, thank you so much for joining us. We love the discussion about grit. As we started formulating this podcast and the idea of doing another follow-up to our Grit podcast from a couple years ago, it was obvious who we had to talk to. And so we appreciate you taking the time. We know that your time is very valuable now, especially since you're trying to improve your yard games.
Oh, that's right. I'm gonna take you up on that challenge.
Let's do it.
All right. All right.
Next time you're out in California, we'll set up some yard games.
Perfect. Maybe it was great to see you guys.
And nice to see you. And congratulations on your huge, huge victory. And
you deserve it.
And I don't know if you saw that.
You worked hard.
That there was a post out there, a text or an article that said, Courtney DeWalter, the greatest ultra runner running right now, or something. I'm paraphrasing, but that was so cool to see. You're getting such great recognition, and you are a great, great runner, and we enjoy watching you.
Well, thank you.
All right,
go out and grit.
We can do that better.
Okay, go ahead. Go out and grit.
Oh,
we didn't do it any better.
0.5.
That was a 0.5.
That was a 0.5. We'll try to improve our endings there. We've only done it 450 times.
Thanks, Courtney.
Thank you very much. Have a good afternoon.
Bye-bye.
You too.
Hey, we just finished up a really fun podcast interview with Courtney DeWalter on grit.
And we found out she's a 4.4 on the grit scale, Scott.
We did measure her, and she came out as a 4.4. And we mentioned before we started the podcast, we're going to tell you about a really cool running series that is based on grit. And we are with Ethan Wayne, who is John Wayne's son, and in charge of the John Wayne Foundation. And when I think about John Wayne, I grew up in Wyoming. John Wayne was a hero of mine. He was gritty. I mean, of course we watched True Grit, right?
Sure.
And most of the characters that he portrayed in the movies, he was just a tough dude. Had a lot of resilience and just a gritty guy. Ethan, was he a gritty guy in real life as well?
You know, it's funny that you talk about his characters because, you know, he was an actor, so he was playing people who exemplified grit, the people who came west, who sort of tamed this country and cleared the way for the rest of us to come and live. But in his personal life, he had a lot of grit as well. You know, he was born in Iowa. The family moved west to the deserts of Mojave here in California, where they tried their hand at farming, and they were not successful. And he used to ride a horse to school, and it was a tough existence for the family. They ended up going down into Glendale, where he, was focused on academics and athletics. And as you know, whether you're going to do well in school or do well on the playing field, it takes a lot of grit to get out there and accomplish. You know, you got to show up. You got to do it not only when you're feeling good, but when you're not feeling good. You know, it sort of separates the seed from the chaff there. And then in his personal life, you know, when his football scholarship was interrupted by an injury, you know, he's got a job at the back lot of Fox Studios as a prop man's assistant. And he showed a lot of grit in the way he cleaned up the set. You know, if they blew leaves on the set and had to reset for another take, he made sure every leaf was off that set. He was a, you know, very focused, project-oriented, hardworking guy. And he you know, parlayed that into, you know, jobs on screen. And those jobs on screen, you know, helped him develop the character that he eventually became, this person that, you know, he wasn't John Wayne to start with. He was Marion Michael Morrison. But, you know, because of his grit and determination, he came to represent us as a people, you know, the Americans who were a melting pot of, you know, people who made their way west and fought not only the travel, right, you know, getting out here on horse or wagon, but then establishing a business and raising a family and creating community and all those things. You know, he represented a lot of these great characters in our own personal American history. And so I would say that he's a person that exemplified grit in his personal life and his professional life.
And now we have the John Wayne Foundation. Tell us a little bit about that and how that came about.
Well, my father died of cancer. He had lung cancer in the mid-60s, which he got past, and then succumbed to stomach cancer in 1979. As he was dying, he looked at us as a family and he said, use my name to help these doctors. And we did. We established a John Wayne Cancer Clinic at UCLA, which eventually moved to Santa Monica and became the John Wayne Cancer Institute. And we also have the John Wayne Cancer Foundation, which we run here in Newport Beach. So the foundation for years has been funded by deals that we make for John Wayne, and it has supported the Institute in its many endeavors, whether it be basic science, immunotherapy, or training new surgical new surgeons to become specialists. So a new surgeon comes out of school and he can go into private practice, or he can come to John Wayne and become an accredited specialist in non-invasive neurosurgery, in breast, in melanoma, in GI, in urology. So John Wayne has trained about 170 surgeons to date. Fellows, you know, live in different places all over the country, and they take their expertise and relationships that they gained during their fellowship program to underserved communities. And now these guys are the best in the business, and the foundation supports them and their research. Wow. If you look at these doctors, each one of those doctors will treat 400 to 600 patients a year. So combined, John Wayne is having a positive effect on about 100,000 people a year in the United States. So it's very significant.
Wow. My goodness. His parting words you took to heart, and I'm sure he'd be very, very proud of all the lives that you've touched. We also have Molly Kessoff on the line, and you've teamed up with her, it looks like, to put together a John Wayne Grit series, a running series. And Molly, can you tell us a little bit about that?
So we are in this race series, which is called the John Wayne Grit Series. And Ethan and I have been friends for about 14 years, as the John Wayne Cancer Foundation has this amazing sunscreen who sponsored my races and that I have in Crystal Cove. And moving forward, Ethan wanted to do a series, a race that was in locations of where his some of his father's most famous movies were filmed. Mm. So the first race series of the series is going to be in the Alabama Hills, which is in Lone Pine, the base of Mount Whitney. About 9 of John Wayne movies were filmed there in the Alabama Hills. So that's the first race, which is coming up October 5th. It's a half marathon and a 10K. And the runners, walkers, hikers all get to enjoy all of the Alabama Hills, the rolling hills, the single tracks, the Mobius Arch, and as well a lot of the locations from the movie How the West Was Won, which was one of his bigger movies that was filmed there in the Alabama Hills. And the race number 2 is coming up a little bit one week after October 15th out here in Colorado, in Ridgeway, Colorado, which is the 50th anniversary of the True Grit movie. And here in Ridgeway. So the runners will be running a 10K or hiking or walking along the Last Dollar Road, which is absolutely beautiful. And it, the runners get to go to the still existing buildings of the movie, in the movie from True Grit, which is the True Grit homestead. So the runners get to go to there. They get to actually tour around if they'd like, come back, and then they go and finish the race. So moving forward, it's just an amazing trail series in these incredible locations of where John Wayne got to work and make these movies. So it's been incredible as I'm in Ridgway, Colorado right now.
If you look at John Wayne films as a whole, they sort of introduced some of these spectacular places to the rest of the country before the internet. You know, people would go on screen and they'd see Monument Valley, or they'd see, you know, the Alabama Hills and Lone Pine at the base of Mount Whitney in the Eastern Sierras, and they're spectacular environments. My dad spent a tremendous amount of his time outdoors, whether it was working on a Western film or, you know, recreating with his friends and family. He was an outdoorsman. And so we thought it was appropriate that, one, we either hit, you know, these great film locations, or two, just go to locations where people would really enjoy being outdoors. So, you know, Molly does a lot of runs, and she enjoys car camping and hanging out with her friends. And, you know, there's a community that shows up. And we thought that was a really good environment for a John Wayne event, because when you make a movie, you know, you go somewhere for 3 months. His films were always someplace pretty rural and remote. And you had this company of people that were working on a project, and they, it was just them, you know, through the completion of that project. And these races that Molly does are similar experiences. You know, you go out to a beautiful place, you're working on this run, you know, people get to come enjoy it, and then you all move on. So we just thought it was a good fit.
Ethan, you know, you brought up something I never really thought about. Back in the day, that was our only way to see some of that country, unless you went out and visited it yourself. You'd go to the big screen. Now we have the luxury of going to Google Maps and zooming in and walking around. Yeah. And now some of this stuff you put on the goggles and you can fight dragons or whatever. But, you know, that was the first introduction to some of these great remote places. Then your dad helped introduce it to us.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Monument Valley, Durango, Mexico, Aspen, Colorado, Ridgway, Colorado. Lone Pine was used extensively in television and film in the early days.
I will tell you, Ethan, I grew up in Casper, Wyoming, and Hellfighters, where he didn't play a cowboy, he played a guy that put out oil fires, oil rig fires.
Right.
Hellfighters was filmed just outside of Casper, and it was supposed to be, I think Africa is where they were supposed to be, but it was filmed outside of where I grew up.
Huh.
I was there. I was a little boy.
Nice. Hey, So you have this really cool, these really cool remote areas where you can maybe watch the movie before you go out there, which would be kind of neat, and you can kind of recognize as you're running around. But this isn't just a race just to put on a bib. It does good. It raises money for the Cancer Foundation. And there's a couple ways that you can register. Molly, maybe you can elaborate on this. You can either register and pay your race fee and go out and race, and you get a shirt and a kind of an old-fashioned tin cup or whatever. But you can also fundraise and actually run the race for free. Can you elaborate on that?
If you'd like to have a team. I'm here.
Sorry, go ahead. I had
can you
on
hear me? Okay.
Yep, go ahead.
Sorry. You can put together a team of runners to raise money, and the proceeds go obviously to the John Wayne Cancer Foundation. And with that, you can earn a free race entry. You'll have your own personalized fundraising page. So there's different levels of, and it's all on the website. There's different levels of raising money. And, you know, if you raise X amount of dollars, you can earn an additional hat or a Patagonia down jacket, a really cool John Wayne belt buckle. So there's a bunch of different incentives to raise money on top of, you know, being a part of this really cool race.
Well,
and it's all on the website.
I don't know if you guys know, but John Wayne, his name, because he said that when he was dying in that bed, you know, 40 years ago, if you've heard of immunotherapy,
yes,
the seeds of immunotherapy were planted at John Wayne. If you're diagnosed with melanoma or breast cancer, you'll get something called the sentinel node biopsy technique. that was pioneered at John Wayne. A translational research facility, John Wayne Cancer Institute, is one of the first translational research facilities in the country. It gets the doctors, the PhDs, the clinicians all in the same space collaborating and moves things forward much faster. So another goal is to let people know just how much work John Wayne has done in cancer. And, it goes from the bench science to the clinical science and clinical trials, all the way to educating children. We just hit 500,000 kids that John Wayne educated on the beaches of Southern California in the Junior Lifeguard Program, teaching them about sun safety and providing them with sunscreen and a hat. His reach is very deep and very broad.
Well, Ethan, thanks for coming on. Molly, thanks for coming on. And let us know, I just learned a ton about the John Wayne Foundation and the far reach that it has. And Molly, thanks for working with Ethan to come up with this race series. If you're interested, you can go to johnwayne.org, and you can take a look at more details there. They're raising money for a good cause. We've talked about the far reach that it has and how it's helped the cancer research and treatment go just the next step. And I think that with the funds that we raise here, we can go to the next level.
And we all know people or have someone, our friends or family, been infected by cancer. And it's the work from these great doctors that get support from this foundation. I think it's very, very important. And Ethan, I'm glad that you listened to your dad, because your family has put together a marvelous effort, and we'd love to be able to support that effort. And I hope you have a fantastic race out there. Are you going to be running out there yourself, Ethan?
Yep, but I'm not going to be a front runner. I'll be bringing up the rear.
Yeah, well, us too.
Will you be on a horse? Right. Will you be on a horse, Ethan? Or are you going to be on your own two legs?
I will not be on a horse, but I will be out there running. Absolutely.
Right on. Good deal. Again, go to
I'll be sleeping in my van as well. So, it's a great place for people to car camp and enjoy the outdoors.
Well, you didn't get too soft there in these years, Ethan. That's good.
If you can't go out this year and participate in the race, at least go on to johnwayne.org and donate. It's a great cause. It's money well spent, and you'll feel better because of it.
So thank you very much, Ethan and Molly, for putting this together.
johnwayne.org.
Appreciate it, you guys. Talk to you soon.
Hey, thank you so much.